Looks like we have everybody. We're going to go ahead and get started. Is that okay, Ms. Michelson? Good. All right. I am going to call the Complaint Screening Committee to order. The time now is 8:42 on April 19th, 2023. Ms. Michelson, would you like to do the roll call, please?
Yes, Madam Chair. Dr. Medina?
Present.
Ms. Shreve?
Present.
Dr. Stewart?
Present.
We have quorum and may proceed.
Thank you. Agenda item number three is the approval of minutes. I am recused from the minutes. I wasn't at the last CSC meeting. Is there a motion to approve the March 22nd regular session minutes as drafted?
So moved.
Second that, I had to recuse myself at the very end of that, but for the meeting I was in attendance, I moved that we accept them and second that.
Ms. Galvin, is that okay? Okay. So we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Is there a motion to approve the March 22nd executive session meeting? And again, I was not there.
So moved.
Second.
Any opposed? Oh, for all in favor? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. And any opposed? Case item number four on the agenda, case discussion and decisions. Complaint Screening Committee, pursuant to Arizona Revised Statute 32-2081H, may dismiss the complaints appearing on this agenda or refer to them to the full board for consideration and action. Complaints dismissed by the committee shall not be disclosed in response to a telephone inquiry or placed on the web to ARS 32-2081-1. Upon a vote of the majority of the quorum, the committee may go into executive session on any item on the agenda pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A2 to review confidential records or subsection A3 to review confidential legal advice from the board's attorney, Ms. Janine Galvin. For those in attendance, please be aware that the chair reserves the right to the order of the item on the agenda based upon parties present. Please use initials only when referring to patients, children, and the complainant. The content of many records involved in these complaints are confidential and the content should not be discussed in a public meeting. Be advised, the committee will go into executive session to discuss any confidential records. A person or a representative of a person who has filed a complaint and is present at today's meeting may make a brief statement to the committee after 5 minutes, only when prompted by the chair. Additionally, the licensee or respondent who is the subject of the complaint will also have an opportunity to make a brief 5-minute statement, only when prompted by the chair. The committee may also have questions for the complainant or respondent after their statement is made. Please note that only individuals directly involved in the complaint, which are the complainant and the respondent, may address the committee and make a statement. If the committee wishes to hear from another party, it will make this request during the case review. For everyone in attendance today, please ensure your audio remains on mute. When prompted by the committee to speak, the complainant, respondent, or their legal representation may unmute themselves at that time. Please note that individuals in attendance who speak without committee approval will be warned twice by the chair not to interrupt. If the interruption continues after the second warning, the individual will be removed from the Zoom meeting and not permitted to re-enter. Our first complaint scheduled today is case number 23-39 for Nicholas Tanner. Dr. Stewart, you are the lead. Would you like to provide a brief summary?
Yes, Madam Chair. Dr. Tanner is a psychologist. Originally licensed in 2018, is currently licensed by the Board of Examiners. The complainant in this case is the mother, and then the patient, the evaluee, is the son. Dr. Tanner conducted a psychological assessment of the son, and the mother alleges various issues, including that Dr. Tanner was unprofessional that he used racial slurs and made inappropriate comments related to race. Number three, diagnosed son based on his on Dr. Tanner's personal beliefs rather than through proper testing. Four, was impatient with the son during the assessment evaluation session. And lastly, spoke to the psychiatrist, the referring psychiatrist, about the son's case without the mother's permission. Dr. Tanner's response was that he works for an agency that under the agency's auspices while he conducted this assessment, and that a part of his duties is to make assessments regarding autism and other neurodevelopmental conditions, as well as behavioral consultations and patient management and training. He has conducted approximately 70 to 100 evaluations per year for various disorders, including ADHD, this attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ASD, which is autism spectrum disorder, and he provides these services to the state board, to the state developmental disabilities population. Dr. Tanner said he conducted the evaluation in September, it looks like, that the child was referred to him by the child's psychiatrist. Dr. Tanner addresses the issue of not giving permission, and yet the psychiatrist and the evaluator, Dr. Tanner, are part of the same staff, and so they were free to exchange information because of their employment status. The Dr. Tanner notes that the mother completed various forms for the agency, that he reviewed behavioral health records, and that the mother did sign a form, general consent form for treatment, which included in that statement is treating providers to order any ancillary services. And that would be an assessment like Dr. Tanner made, deemed necessary for the care of the child. And that additionally, it was stated in the form that mother signed, I understand that my healthcare providers will have access to my healthcare information across the continuation of my care. Following a handoff from the psychiatrist, Dr. Tanner greeted the mother and the son. Dr. Tanner notes that the son had previously been evaluated by a neuropsychologist in 2020 or 2022. I don't have that date right here. By neuropsychologist Dr. Deneen, D-E-N-E-E-N. And that Dr. Tanner noted that in that report, significant deficiencies when diagnosing autism. Dr. Tanner had a pretty clear idea as to why son was denied services and for the DDD population. And Dr. Tanner relates that he also explained these to the mother at a later session. Dr. Tanner outlines the evaluation process that he went through with the son. He looked at the school checklist, symptoms to look at the impaired areas. Dr. Tanner explained to mother that he was concerned that the prior evaluation that gave an ASD diagnosis was made with primary reliance on a Gillingham Autism Rating Scale, with little other information.
So just to remind you, we want to stay away from diagnoses on the record.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Ms. Gavin. And so anyway, Dr. Tanner's assessment was that the child did not have enough of the symptoms present to make a specific diagnosis, that apparently it went against the prior evaluation from Dr. Deenan. Dr. Tanner requests that the complaint be dismissed. That's the end of my narrative.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. Is the complainant MS present? And if you are, if you could unmute, please.
Sorry, my son is crying. One second. Okay, sorry. What did you say? I apologize.
That's okay. Thank you for being with us today. We appreciate it. I wanted to give you an opportunity to make a brief statement, and then the board members will be asked if they have any questions for you. So would you like to make a summary or a statement to the board?
Is it a response to what I heard, or just in general?
It could be just in general, or regarding the situation. Or it could be a response. You have a few minutes.
Okay. It was going in and out. Sorry, I'm in my car, but I did hear that something about the psychiatrist doing a referral. That's not correct. Dr. Tanner actually came up to me in the hallway informing me that he could get my son DDD services with his evaluation and that I should schedule with him. So nobody referred my son. I actually just scheduled for him. So if there was a referral done, I was not made aware of that. I don't know exactly what information was shared behind the scenes, since they do work in the same clinic. However, they are in different departments. So that's one thing to that. Also with the racial comments, it was very inappropriate. It was unprofessional. That was my main complaint to the board, is like, that was just not okay. Like, you shouldn't mention anything about Black people having certain IQs or certain mental health issues and all that type of stuff, because I'm not even fully Black and neither is my son. So I didn't appreciate that. I didn't like that. What else? And with the testing, I only observed one session. And in that session, I seen him rushing my son to answer behind the window. He was getting irritated with him taking long, as if my son was supposed to just know what he was asking. And with the other testing, I only gave that information because he asked to see his autism diagnosis. That's not something I had to share or give in any of those sessions. He could have just did his own evaluation, but he took that evaluation and tried to say it was not sufficient, even though it was done by a licensed psychologist as well. So I didn't understand the point of what he did. It just seemed like he was doing something for his own nature. I don't know, but that's my response to that. All the things I claim did happen. It's not falsified information, and that's my stance on it.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Board members, do you have any questions for MS?
Not at this time. Thank you.
Dr. Stewart? Hearing none from Dr. Stewart. I have a quick question. When you say that the Dr. Tanner was rushing the question or rushing your son, could you give us just what do you mean by that? What behavior or what did you see in regards to that? What was your perception?
So as I was watching my son, it was like some pictures or something he was showing him, and my son was like having his hand to the side, like he was thinking, or he was doing something to where he wasn't answering, and Dr. Tanner's demeanor was looking as if he was getting irritated. He was like leaned over, looking like he was huffing, and you could just see it in his face. And then he was flipping pages really fast as my son is even trying to answer. So it was like he was not really letting him answer to his abilities. He was trying to make it seem like, you should know this, so do it. That's how it looked from my side.
All right. Thank you, MS. Dr. Stewart, do you have any questions?
No, Ms. Shreve, not at this point.
Okay, thank you. MS, thank you for being with us. We're now going to move to the licensee. So we have Dr. Tanner, and I believe Dr. Akins is also representing you. If you could both introduce yourselves, especially for the board meeting.
I'll speak up first. I'm Dr. Farron Akins. I am counsel for Dr. Tanner. He can go ahead and introduce himself. I know he has some comments that he's prepared to share with you. Perhaps it might make more sense for him to offer his comments first. And then if you all have any specific questions about any of the comments made today by the complainant, I'm sure Dr. Tanner would be happy to address those as well. Thanks.
Thank you. Dr. Tanner, if you'd like to introduce yourselves, and then if you have a statement, you're on mute. You'll need to take yourself off mute.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Nick Tanner. So thank you for letting me be here today. I know you've reviewed the complaint and my response, so let me just jump in to highlight some points that might be important, and then I'm happy to answer any questions you might have. So please know that I begin every intake with a discussion of confidentiality and its limits, including that CRS uses a medical home model and that providers, we collaborate at CRS. So I'm only one of several people involved in evaluating and treating patients at CRS, where I've worked for 5 years. The psychiatrist's office is across the hallway from mine. And we have even more explicit language in our general consent about collaboration. So Child was referred to me because I specialize in a specific condition that another psych originally diagnosed. However, that evaluation was lacking and they were unable to qualify for services. I recognized and explained these deficiencies and that we would need to conduct a more comprehensive evaluation, one more aligned with the best practices for assessing for that specific condition. We also discussed the possibility that Child might not meet the criteria for this condition because I was observing a ton of strengths and there was a clear need to examine other possible conditions that have a different treatment validity. Many strengths were observed and reported during intake in Child that might lead down a different diagnostic path. On the day Mother observed, I did have to redirect Child a couple of times to avoid spoiling results. I was not disappointed by Child's behavior or flustered. I was maintaining standardization. Sometimes that means cutting a kid off when they reach a ceiling or a basal, a time limit, or withholding feedback or praise. I should also add that my cognitive and achievement results are generally in line with the prior eval. So best practices when assessing for this condition include a specific test, and I will omit its name to maintain privacy, but it emphasizes coding for specific behaviors like eye contact, initiation, or response to joint attention are a few. It's how they communicate in response to these social presses, and then you rate it if the content is likely to be true and the frequency and quality of interactions that align with, you know, the positive and negative symptoms of that condition. And when you score, you only score it during the confines of that administration. This test is widely considered to be the best for the referral concern, and I've been trained, observed, supervised extensively in its use and interpretation. And this test has really good psychometrics, sensitivity, and specificity. So when working with the family, I acknowledge the child has a different cultural identity than mine. I invited them to discuss their feelings and to bring up any concerns. I provided education about the research on testing bias, that when someone's culture does not necessarily fall in the dominant group on a norm test, care and interpretation is needed. For example, IQ tests have been heavily researched to underestimate certain skills in diverse populations. However, they're still pretty useful in understanding how a child processes information, and a lot of agencies also require them. So for eligibility decisions. So during interactions with mother, I took care to monitor my language. And if I used language that mother found offensive, I'm sorry. It certainly wasn't intentional. And so because CRS has like a psych department, I have free access to other psychs, and I actually consulted another psychologist at CRS about this case. I wanted to pick her brain about how events in child's history might explain certain behaviors. I wanted to get her thoughts that my interpretation of his observed strengths were leading towards a different diagnostic path. We discussed the differential, his other diagnoses, and how they might be better explained by events in his learning history, his environmental history, his social history. And other members of his team also did not think his behavior was consistent with the specific diagnosis that mother seems to desire. So evaluations involving a late diagnosis of this condition can be hard and complex. And this is pretty true in this case. Child has a pretty complex behavioral presentation and a complex history. But this evaluation was conducted in a manner consistent with research and best practices and did not significantly differ from my usual process. I obtained information from multiple sources using multiple methods. And in arriving at these diagnoses, my intent was not to discriminate against child in any way. I was trying to communicate and to recognize how the tools we use may have limitations and need to be interpreted with care. My intent was to arrive at a diagnostic picture that is more accurate and helps make useful recommendations in hopes of affecting like a more adaptive outcome. While also advocating for child's strengths, which are many. But I recognize that I can always do better too. You know, I've taken several steps to improve my assessment and cultural responsivity skills, in addition to a ton of reading related to cultural competency and assessment. I've completed around 6 hours of continuing education, focusing mostly on assessment and diversity. And I've also advocated for a formal consultation group at work. And they're actually gonna block our schedules for an hour on the first Tuesday of every month, which is pretty significant for all the providers to get together. So overall, this process has been a source of much reflection and growth. And again, thank you for hearing me out, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Tanner. Board members, do you have any questions for Dr. Tanner? Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Tanner, thank you for being here this morning. So the psychometrics that you employed and used to assess the son are, am I understanding your responses that these are readily recognized psychometric tests used to assess a diagnostic impression that the previous evaluation was considering, and that mother seemed to have a wish to have that specific diagnosis in order to receive services? Let me say, are the psychometric testing that you use appropriate for that population and purpose?
Yes. So there's kind of, I guess, two reasons when you're doing an evaluation to help a family get services from the Department of Developmental Disabilities. You have to kind of check the bureaucracy's box a little bit. And a lot of insurances actually require that specific test before they will reimburse for the Keystone behavioral intervention for this specific condition. So that's the other reason. But typically I give the test to better understand the child. And it's a good test. It's I don't know if I'm answering the question. Correct. I might be meandering, but
let me follow up with along the same lines, if I may. So I noticed the specific test you administered, the WISC-5, as well as the GARS-3.
But can I just, Ms. Galvin, can we be naming tests in the public meeting, or do we need to be in executive session?
I think the name of the tests are okay. And the client, the mother is protected by initials, but we just try to do our best not disclose the diagnosis.
No diagnosis. We just want to make sure we're, and if that's important, then we can go in exec session. I just wanted to remind everybody that. All right, go ahead.
Thank you, Ms. Shreve. So administering these specific tests as well as the Woodcock-Johnson psychoeducational battery, have you been trained in the administration and interpretation of those tests?
Oh, yes. Just to be clear, I never gave the GARS, my doctorate's in school psychology, and I actually was trained in Woodcock-Johnson on the third author, Nancy Mather. I love it. It's a great test. I think it actually taps into reading processes. And one of the reasons I actually wanted academic testing is child has a unique educational placement. And I wanted to make sure that he wasn't going to academically languish there and to capture some of those strengths.
And to follow up on that, in addition to your training on the administration and interpretation of those tests, have you also researched and reviewed materials about multicultural differences in the using of those psychometric instruments?
Yes, I have. I can kind of give an overview a little bit of how some of these bias creeps in to some of these tests, but it has to do with culture kind of affects all sorts of things like familial relationships, nonverbals, identity, access to education services and background knowledge. And so those are some of the methods or some of the ways that people from differing cultures may appear to have certain skills underestimated by those tests.
Thank you. Additionally, you are at work in the formal consultation group at work, mm-hmm. and that was established when?
After this complaint.
Okay.
We had our first one.
Prior to this complaint, and during the process of assessment of this child, did I understand you correctly that you also consulted another psychologist at CRS regarding this child's, or at least the case issues, whether you name the child or not? You gave a presentation to this other psychologist and got feedback from that other person.
Yes, actually, it was the psychiatrist. And CRS is, I kind of want to give a perspective of how big CRS is. So we see around 4,000 patients a month, and it's a multi-specialty medical clinic. And our department, behavioral health, is one of the largest, and we have nurse practitioners. We have 3 or 4 psychiatrists right now, and then we have four or five psychiatrists. And then we also have 3 counselors, and we're all in the same hallway, and doors are always open, and we are always consulting each other. It's one of the best parts of my job is I get to have access to so many professionals. And then outside of our department, we have neurologists and pulmonology, people we can really consult to get a cohesive picture of the child.
Okay. Thank you so much. Ms. Shreve, that's the end of my questions for right now.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. Dr. Medina?
No questions at this time, Ms. Shreve. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. I don't have any further questions. Thank you very much, Dr. Tanner. MS, I see your hand up. I'm not sure. Did you have a question about the process?
No, I was just trying to see if I could actually make a statement.
Ms. Galvin, yes, you go ahead and make it. You can make a statement.
So I just wanted to say, if my child already had a specific diagnosis that's in question, and I already had that proof from a doctor, I wouldn't go to another doctor to try to get that diagnosis again. So I just want to put that out there.
All right. Thank you. I'd like to thank both parties for being here today. Hearing no further questions, we're going to move into deliberations. Deliberation is a time where the committee members can talk amongst ourselves without interruption from the complainant licensee attorneys. Dr. Stewart, you were the lead. Would you like to lead the deliberations on this discussion?
Yes, Ms. Shreve, I appreciate that. Thank you so much. I certainly appreciate MS being here as well as Dr. Tanner. I think these evaluations frequently show different results from one examiner to another. It's not because of bad examination practices, but the examinee, the child in this case, it really depends on how much rest they had the night before, what their eating intake is, activity level, prior to the examination. It's not unusual at all, for psychologists to see the same person and to come up with slightly different results. I think in this case, Dr. Tanner responded appropriately with his consultation with another psychologist. He also had access, as I understand from Dr. Tanner, there was an actual referral from the psychiatrist, from the treating psychiatrist, although mother indicates that that's not accurate. May I ask for clarification on that, Madam Chair, real quick?
I guess you can ask Dr.
Tanner.
Ms. Galvin, just real quick, because we are in deliberate. Okay. Dr. Tanner, could you just explain how the client, you were referred to the client?
So I met them, I believe, in like September, and I'm always in the hallway if I don't have a patient or I'm not documenting. And I was walking, and then it's very common for the psychiatrists to, I'm so sorry, some of my kids' drawings just fell. So I'm always in the hallway, and it's very common for families to be leaving like an appointment and then for them to do a warm handoff. So Dr. Silvestrini said, howdy, you know, these people have a referral and they'll be coming to see you. That's when I greeted them. And then in our system as well.
Okay, so that was documented in your internal system and CRS that the psychiatrist had made this referral?
I believe so.
Okay. Certainly based on that, going back to discussion, it seems like the psychometric testing from my read of, I'm not a neuropsychologist nor a pediatric psychologist, but my experience suggests that the tests administered were appropriate. And I'm at a loss to see any formal violation of ethics or any violation of rules or statutes. So unless someone else can point me in a direction where there is any clear-cut violation, I'm inclined to go with the licensee's request for dismissal.
All right. Thank you. Dr. Medina, any comments?
I agree with Dr. Stewart's assessment. I don't see anything that I would consider out of the ordinary. And, apologize. And I support Dr. Stewart's opinion on this.
Dr. Stewart, are you making a motion?
Just one more statement, if I may, before I make a motion. In looking at language used to explain cultural and racial backgrounds and differences on or standardization of psychometric instruments, psychologists mostly try to use neutral language. It would be unusual for me to find someone that would actually use racial slurs in such explanations. So my motion is to dismiss this complaint.
All right, we have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Again, I'd like to thank both parties for being here today. We do appreciate your attendance. We're now going to move on to agenda item 4B, which is case number 23-42, Dr. Lee Underwood. Dr. Medina, you are the lead. Would you like to provide a brief summary?
Yes, thank you, Ms. Shreve. This is complaint number 23-42 against Dr. Lee Underwood, holder of Arizona license number 3932, issued on June 24th, 2008. He's also licensed in the state of Virginia. On February 28th, 2023, the board received a complaint against Dr. Underwood filed by SH, who was interviewing for a position at the agency where Dr. Underwood works. On February 24th, SH was touring the agency as she was offered a clinical director position and wished to have a tour before making a final decision on the offer. The complaint alleges that Dr. Underwood violated HIPAA as during the tour of the two facilities, Dr. Underwood showed SH, a client's name, and was able to see protected health information on the electronic health record. SH also noted that Dr. Underwood went on to show her a text from his work phone that contained a client's name and the admission thread of the text. SH's last concern is regarding the level of information shared by text, as she indicated that she saw a future client's name, date of birth, and other relevant information. Dr. Underwood responded to the complaint on March 16, 2023, where he denied the allegations. Upon staff request, Dr. Underwood supplied two letters from agency representatives, one of whom accompanied Dr. Underwood and SH for part of the tour. Dr. Underwood affirmed that the EHR was not accessed during the tour and that he provided SH with steps involved in the staffing process, but that no names were provided. Dr. Underwood denied that there was an emergency staffing or meeting held during the tour. Dr. Underwood reported that he responded to a consult call where SH could hear only his side of the consultation and his recommendation, but that no client name was discussed in the phone call and the call was not held on a speakerphone. And that concludes my summary.
Thank you very much. Is the complainant SH present? If you are present, if you could unmute yourself. Again, SH. Okay, not hearing. One more time, is SH present? All right, we'll move to Dr. Underwood. Are you present? I believe you. I see a name. If you could unmute yourself.
There you go. Yes, I am present.
Okay, thank you very much. Dr. Underwood, thank you for being here with us today. Would you like to, are you represented by any attorney or are you here representing yourself?
Representing.
Okay, just want to confirm that. If you'd like to make a opening statement or to the board, and then the board members may have questions for you. Do you have any comments you'd like to make? Mr. Underwood, I can't hear you. Are you?
Can you hear me now?
Yep, I can hear you now. All right.
Okay, gotcha. Like... Thank you.
Okay, would you like to make a statement to the board?
There you go. You can hear me now, right?
I can hear you, yes.
Thank you guys so much. I was going from earphone. Yeah, on the 24th of February, I did a second interview with her, SH, just to tour the facility that she might be working at for those purposes. She was told that there would be no client contact. It was just going to be a tour with a health manager, that there would be no contact with clients. And such was done. The tour didn't last terribly long. I can't remember, 10, 15 minutes at the most. And so, yeah, there was no staffing. I did receive a call during the tour from a provider, internal provider, and I provided them just a minute or so worth of instructions on how to handle the matter, but there was no names discussed or no date of birth or anything like that. So I'm not quite sure where that comes from. Additionally, when I look at it in terms of discussion of a client file, there was no specific discussion of a client file outside of the management issue when the staff called, the provider called about a client. There was no name. I just said, these are the kind of issues that clinical directors tend to get during the day. And so I'm not quite sure where that came from with her. And then we looked at no client file, no electronic record was open. We didn't even go. I pointed out toward the medical file cabinet where locked medications are placed. But I don't have a key to that, and we never opened that. Neither did the health manager. And then regarding the text complaint, we never showed a text at all outside of referencing referrals are alerted through the text, through an intake process. But again, no names are shared with that. So yeah, those are my thoughts. I'm not quite sure where some of the allegations are coming from, but I deny any HIPAA violations at all. I've done these interviews on multiple occasions where people come in and we just do a tour of the facility. So those are my comments.
Thank you. And we appreciate you being here today. Committee members, do you have any questions for Dr. Underwood? Dr. Stewart?
Thank you, Ms. Shreve. Dr. Underwood, thank you for being here this morning. The complainant, SH, what position was she applying for with your agency?
Yes, she was applying for a clinical director position.
What are her credentials?
She's a licensed professional counselor, I believe, LPC.
Okay, thank you. Now, it's my understanding that the health manager accompanied you and SH on the tour of the facility?
That's correct. Yep, RH accompanied. And generally, when I do tours like that, I have them accompany to kind of show off their house and what they're trying to accomplish.
Okay. I don't know if I direct this question to Dr. Underwood or to the board staff. Do we have any letter or statement from the health manager regarding this situation?
We have, I think, one letter or two from staff.
Yeah.
In the packet.
That, yes. That says no health information was revealed?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Medina. I have no further questions, Ms. Shreve.
Dr. Medina, do you have any questions?
I do have one question, Dr. Underwood. At any point, was there opportunity for SH to see PHI from, you know, one of the clients you serve? Either because perhaps it wasn't you, but staff had something open at the time of the visit?
No, there was no occasion for that. We just walked through, looked at the postings, looked at the licensing, looked at the schedule. These are the kind of things the guys go through each day, kind of talked about the clinical expectations. So no open records, no, there was none of that there. And the health managers, generally, when they do the tour, all of that sanitized and clean. And so I generally call the health manager ahead of time and say, listen, we're going to be touring somebody, you know, let's have things proper and in order. So none of that.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Underwood. That's my only question. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Ms. Shreve. Dr. Underwood, do you know whether or not the complainant, SH, was offered employment at your agency?
She was offered tentative employment short of the interview. But after the interview or the tour, actually, she denied. She did not come aboard. So she's not offered employment. She's not there.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right. Are there any further questions? All right. Dr. Underwood, thanks for being here today. We really do appreciate it. We're now going to move into deliberations. And again, deliberations is a time for the board members to talk amongst ourselves. Dr. Medina, you are the lead. Would you like to start deliberations?
Yes, Ms. Reeve, thank you. I don't see that there's any evidence that any PHI information was available, I guess, to be seen, or that there were any HIPAA violations based on the evidence that we have in front of us. So, I will move to dismiss the complaint.
All right, Dr. Stewart.
I will second that motion.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Again, Dr. Underwood, thanks for being here with us today. We do appreciate it. That concludes all of our cases for today. Very last item on the agenda is adjournment. Is there a, first of all, let me just say a big thank you to staff and to Ms. Galvin, yay, for providing all this information and keeping us within our legal bounds, which we always appreciate. So is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
We got a motion and a second. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. All right. Thank you very much. Meeting is adjourned.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.